KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
El Cerrito.
Union Square.
San Francisco.
South of Market.
From Albany.
Hayes Valley.
Rock Ridge.
Coming up, a new belief system born in prison.
I picture you like two old rabbis like strolling in the yard, talking about the Torah together.
That's exactly what we would do. We would walk laps on the yard discussing evolutionary possibilities.
From the spiritual edge, a story about making meaning from behind bars.
Everything is moving in the universe. It is not static, and neither are we, neither is life and evolution. It's all in the process of becoming.
And a personal story about a cancer patient who rafted the Grand Canyon with his nephew.
If I had given up, I wouldn't have been on the Grand Canyon with you last summer.
Making space for the sacred, today on Cross Currents. Today, we're starting with a story from KALW's project, The Spiritual Edge.
I'm a Muslim.
I am a Jewish.
I have no religion.
I'm Christian.
Reform Judaism.
I'm Catholic.
Muslim. Not religious.
Buddhist.
Southern Baptist.
Hindu. Atheist.
Christian.
Agnostic.
Catholic.
It's not uncommon for prison inmates to find religion or to become devout followers of a faith that never interested them before. There's plenty of time to think about life and fate and how you ended up here. People reach out for some kind of meaning system, something that can give them hope. What isn't common is for a prison inmate to construct his own meaning system, brick by brick, so to speak, from a combination of evolutionary science and Eastern philosophy. But that's just what Gary Shepard did. Reporter Mark Betancourt brings us the story of an inmate who was saved by science and who in turn wants to save the world.
I'm standing across two lanes of blacktop from a sprawling prison complex in the middle of a very flat, very drab part of the Arizona desert. This is the east unit of the Arizona State Prison Complex in Florence. I can just make out a cluster of double-wide trailers lined up end to end. That's where Gary Shepard lives. These trailers are known as the Honor Dorms, the coveted place to live in East Unit, but it's still prison, surrounded by two layers of chain-link fence, both topped by concertina wire. Journalists aren't allowed to interview Arizona inmates in person, but I wanted to see for myself where Gary lives. We've been talking by phone for months.
We got locked down at 10:30, and then they count around 11. I like to walk or meditate.
Gary is 45 years old. He spent more than half of those years incarcerated, his entire adult life. In that time, he's become a self-taught scholar, a self-made philosopher, and what he calls an evolutionary.
It's like the emerging term because it doesn't mean just evolution, it means revolutionary, because there's a spirit of action and there's change.
In 1991, at the age of 20, Gary got into trouble. He was using a lot of drugs, he'd done a little time for burglary, and he was on parole, which he promptly violated. When his parole officers tried to arrest him at a mall in Tucson, he fired a gun into the ground to create a distraction. At the time, this offense carried a mandatory sentence of life in prison.
So much time when I didn't hurt anybody, nor did I intend to hurt anybody. To me, that seemed instinctively very wrong, you know.
When he first got to prison, Gary tried to escape, assaulting two guards in the process. That earned him a year in solitary confinement. Inmates call it the hole.
I would just walk back and forth and just think, you know, what happened in my life, what really went wrong, what's wrong with the system. It was just it just seemed so bizarre to me that it seemed like the problem was much bigger even than me.
It was at this moment that he decided to educate himself. He started reading voraciously, trying to make sense of things. Then Gary had a kind of epiphany from a pretty unexpected source.
Over eons of time, a single species gives rise to many.
Watching TV one day, he saw a PBS special on early hominids and how they evolved into modern humans.
It completely changed me because it's almost like a light went on and I felt like that's absolutely where we came from. It was a fact. And it changed my whole view of the world, you know.
Gary dove into studying evolution along with anything related to it, which he realized was everything.
I'm studying anthropology, history, biology, philosophy, And it was very quickly that I had like a vision of the purpose, you know, I foreseen like the purpose of life. It almost gave me like a faith.
Gary's parents weren't religious, and he says he didn't have much of a moral framework growing up. Since he's been in prison, though, he's been gathering concepts and practices he happens upon to help him survive. He's like a spiritual scavenger. Early on in his sentence, when he was in solitary, a chaplain of the Sikh faith taught Gary the basics of meditation, how to control his breathing and clear his mind. Later, that led him to look into other mindfulness practices. He started learning yoga and tai chi from books and mail-order DVDs. He read books on Eastern philosophy. He says Sun Tzu's The Art of War is his favorite because it provides practical advice on how to survive in a violent situation, like, say, everyday life in prison.
It's not like most people think, because they hear that word war, so they automatically think violence.
He says what really clicked with him was Sun Tzu's emphasis on winning by avoiding conflict.
To seek to do the most with the least, to resolve problems before they occur, and ultimately to try to make conflict altogether unnecessary.
He wasn't always so cool and collected. Gary's nickname in prison is Scrappy, and not for nothing. When he first got to prison, he fought anyone who interfered with him, even guards. But as his worldview began to shift, Gary used this reputation and the concepts he was learning to take on a kind of philosophical crusade.
I might just see somebody talking through the fence or something, and then I'd automatically sense that things aren't going to go right. And I could perceive how that was going to escalate into violence. You know, in a very respectful way, I would let them know that that wasn't going to happen. It wasn't going to be allowed to happen without there being a response.
He also started debating his fellow inmates about things like the origin of life, challenging their beliefs, or in some cases, introducing them to the idea of evolution for the first time. And Gary says people really responded.
It's strange to say so, but it almost gave me like an authority figure on certain things. And, you know what I mean? Like they looked to me almost like a leading personality because of my knowledge.
The most important evolutionary concept to Gary, and the one he really tried to impress on his fellow inmates, was a subcategory of natural selection called group selection. This is where Gary's wading into a somewhat controversial scientific debate. The traditional view is that evolution depends on the strength or intelligence of individual animals, and that competition between these individuals is the main driver of natural selection. But some scientists theorize that cooperation is equally or even more important than competition, and that natural selection happens at the group as well as the individual level. For humans, that means groups of people who work together can survive to procreate. Those who fight amongst themselves eventually die out. As crazy as it sounds, Gary would take this idea to the gang leaders in prison to try to get them to change.
So what I'll do is I'll talk to somebody and I'll say, look, I understand where you're coming from, and I understand why you may feel the way that you do. They are part of this team. They're loyal to that team, and there's a certain level of fear and concern when that team is threatened. But you don't want to go too far with that, because then you create a win-lose situation and you reduce the ability to cooperate. And that only leads to one alternative, and that's violence.
These conversations weren't just about convincing his fellow inmates to be more peaceful. They came from a deep-seated belief Gary holds about the nature of evolution. In his studies, Gary had come across the writings of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, a 20th century Jesuit priest who theorized that evolution is a conscious process, that the universe wants to perfect itself, and that humans can actively participate through the choices we make. It was and still is a fringe concept in the mainstream science world, but for Gary, it fit perfectly with his image of himself as an evolutionary spirit warrior.
Because I'm filled with like this sense of injustice and this unfairness, and I didn't like to see prisoners mistreated by other prisoners or getting hurt, when I feel like that we should be focusing on, you know, it's almost like working together more as a team, and that's what group level selection is, and that's what brought out this altruism to want to represent the group.
Altruism. This is what Gary really found in the science. A sense that we have to take care of each other in order to succeed as a group. That's what Gary means when he says that studying evolution gave him a sense of purpose.
You know that saying that says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and all else will be added on to you? Well, I really feel that that has truth in the sense that once you find the higher purpose, everything else falls into place.
Over time, Gary found more ways to live the sense of purpose he'd found. Around 2003, 12 years into his sentence, he got together with a couple of other inmates and started a peer education program they called Be Free. They'd teach basic skills, health and hygiene, and tips for survival after release. The prison gave them an office to work out of, and a little bit of pay, about $3 a day. Gary saw the classes as an opportunity to educate fellow prisoners on his developing blend of science and philosophy.
Basically, we'd start a lot with the Big Bang, and we'd go through and the quantum realms. I'll talk about what creates cultural evolution. I'll get into the evolution of our morals, multi-level selection.
Gary was also sharing his own special blend of yoga and mindfulness practices, including something he calls Poet Chi. It's basically the Tai Chi he learned, but with him freestyling about evolution and spirituality along with the movements.
Everything is moving in the universe. It is not static, and neither are we, neither is life and evolution. It's all in the process of becoming. And in that process of becoming, the yin and the yang, the back and the forth, is the impetus that creates change. That is the catalyst for evolution.
When I brought somebody like Gary Shepherd in front of my class and he spoke to these inmates, they listened.
Colleen Fitzpatrick Rogers worked as a substance abuse counselor in the state prison complex in Florence. We talked at her house a few minutes' drive from the prison, sitting on her couch near an aquarium full of fish. Colleen is retired now, but she knew the guys running the Be Free program and would help them get materials or information they needed for their classes. She also invited Gary to teach yoga and mindfulness to her addiction groups.
You could drop a dime in there and you wouldn't hear it because that vibe between them and his story was phenomenal. I'd ask them what their thoughts were, and some of them would really be thinking because it was new to them. You don't have some guy talking to you and doing yoga and teaching you in a crack house.
Colleen says Gary commanded respect from other inmates, partly because he lived by his philosophy. He practiced what he preached, and maybe because that had so clearly changed his life.
He just found what he needs as far as peace inside of him, you know? And not many people outside even ever get that.
Troy Froelich was one of the guys Gary worked with on the Be Free program. Troy was released in 2014 after serving 24 years for bank robbery and assaulting guards in jail. He says the things he learned from Gary helped him find inner peace too.
Whenever it looks like it may be a stressful situation or something that could raise an anxiety in me, I just realized that I'm a part of evolution, you know, that this is the way it's supposed to be. And I put myself immediately in the moment and I look around and I think, wow, this is wonderful. I like this.
You're okay. You're all right.
Troy lives in Tucson now, just an hour and a half down the road from the prison where he met Gary, his best friend.
Okay. It's good. It's probably a little
he points at a shy-looking black dog sitting on his couch.
That's Scrappy.
Really? Named after him?
Yeah.
Really?
Come here. Come back here. Get back over.
Like Gary, Troy had experienced an awakening in solitary, after which he started studying history, psychology, religion, and melding it all into something that worked for him. He got really into Joseph Campbell's comparative mythology and started observing the Jewish Sabbath as a mindfulness practice. When Troy and Gary met one day in the chow hall, they instantly recognized each other as kindred spirits. They spent the next 10 years collaborating every day on what they call the work.
As soon as he would come up with a concept, he would come down to my room immediately and start sharing it with me.
I picture you like two old rabbis like strolling in the yard, you know, like yeah. Talking about the Torah together. Whatever.
That's exactly what we would do. We would walk laps on the yard discussing evolutionary possibilities.
One of the stronger things is that me and Troy share is extreme altruism. That's where we were able to click on such a level where we could develop such a trust that, I mean, we became like one unit. So if you dealt with either one of us, you'd have to deal with us both as one. And I would lay down my life for him and he'd lay down his life for me.
Then Troy came up for parole, and it was granted. Gary helped him with his speech for the parole board, And before he left, Gary made him a handwritten manual on how to function in the outside world. It was based on everything they'd learned and taught to other inmates for 10 years. The manual was the only thing Troy took with him.
I didn't tell Gary this, but when I got into the staff vehicle at the prison, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm just sitting there, and a tear rolled out of my eye.
Troy says that even though he had his own epiphany before meeting Gary, it's really Gary's influence that turned his life around.
It is entirely possible without slowing down my brain and starting to accept these concepts that we talk about and knowing that there's a different way, I may have just continued on the life that I was living before, which led me to a bank robbery. Why would I change?
These days, Gary's community is expanding beyond just people he's met in prison.
Well, Gary reached out to me by letter, which is the only way that a prisoner, I learned, can reach out.
David Sloan Wilson is a professor of evolutionary biology in Binghamton, New York. He's a pretty central player in the evolutionary altruism field. Gary had read his book, The Neighborhood Project, which argues that people can improve their communities by using evolutionary theory as a guide for cooperative behavior. You can see why Gary wanted to get in touch with him.
By the first letter or exchange of a few letters, it was clear that in some ways what we were doing was quite similar.
Gary and David struck up a kind of academic friendship, talking on the phone every week. David recorded this conversation and published the transcript in his online evolution magazine, This View of Life.
Yeah, what you're saying, I think, what you're saying is that it's basically that there's a moral system within the prison.
Yeah, very moral. I mean,
all the while, David was sending Gary more books, feeding his curiosity.
I mentored him. I'm his instructor, in a sense, if he was a college student. But of course, he's much more voracious and passionate than almost any of my actual students.
But Gary and David don't agree on everything, like the idea that some unifying force in the universe is deliberately trying to improve itself through evolution.
Gary has been influenced by lots of trends, including Eastern religious and spiritual traditions. It's just part of human nature to hold beliefs that are false in the scientific sense of the word. And the reason that we do is that those beliefs are useful. They are the beliefs that help us get by.
As for Gary's belief that we have the ability, even the obligation, to help evolution along, David says that's not so far-fetched.
The reason that science often doesn't function in the same capacity as a religion is that it merely tells you what is. It doesn't tell you what to do. It's up to academic science, actually, to catch up to Gary in an interesting way as to is there some sense in which people, a person or people or all of us as a society, can be agents of evolution, more or less steer the evolutionary process.
I asked David whether Gary's journey is itself an example of cultural evolution, a whole school of thought developed in an isolated environment, like an academic Galapagos island.
Most novelties arise in isolated populations. That's where new things happen. And so I think Gary is very much like a Galapagos island. It's an isolated situation. He's come up with something. It hangs together for himself. Then, of course, whether it spreads and survives in other contexts remains to be seen.
Gary's whole goal in life now is for his ideas to spread and survive.
Now, I believe that the main solution in cohering people has to be a new belief system. We have to create a new idea of purpose and why we're here and meaning. Because if we have millions of different purposes and meanings and value systems, we're not going to cohere. And no society we've ever seen can survive that.
He says if he's ever able to get out of prison, he'll link up with Troy and continue with the work. Maybe start a business creating internet courses that explain, in simple terms, the ideas they've spent all these years developing. He is working with a lawyer from the Arizona Justice Project to see if his sentence could be appealed. If that doesn't happen, Gary's first chance for parole isn't until 2028. Because he can't control when or whether he gets out, he doesn't think about it too much. But he does look forward to joining a community on the outside that shares his beliefs and his sense of purpose.
And I can find people like David to be around, and these other people, and I consider them to be the most intelligent and altruistic people in the world that are a force for positive change. And I want to help them and make sure they're secure and their families are secure, and that we can do all that we can to make them successful. And I want to barbecue and eat with them, and I just want to be part of that whole family, you know?
Do you wish that you had just not gotten in trouble in the first place and not ended up in prison? Or do you feel like you don't?
I'm glad that it happened to me, because I wouldn't be who I am without the experience. But more importantly, I have found what I believe to be the truth of where we came from, of why we're here, and what we need to do in the future. And that the feeling of fighting for that and contributing to that is I wouldn't trade it for anything. Everything that happened to me was worth it.
In Florence, Arizona, I'm Mark Betancourt for The Spiritual Edge.
Find more stories from The Spiritual Edge at our website, klw.org. Click Cross Currents. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hena Baba. We have another story from The Spiritual Edge now, this one in partnership with San Francisco StoryCorps. Frank Hatch lived with HIV for more than 20 years, only to be hit by cancer in 2010. For comfort and guidance, he turned to his Buddhism practice, and encouraged by his nephew, he decided to do something he thought he never could. Before he passed away, Frank and his nephew Jason Friend discussed Frank's determination to live life to the fullest.
You know, when cancer hit, it was a really low blow. I mean, here I survived HIV long enough only to die from cancer, which was missed.
Well, you're not dead yet.
I'm not dead yet, but it's hard because it's in my face every day. So I think, you know, Buddhism just sort of put to words what I've always sort of inherently known, that the key to being happy is to love the best you can. And the rest of it sort of just takes care of itself. This whole process of being sick for so long, I mean, if I had given up, I wouldn't have been on the Grand Canyon with you last summer. I remember it was January, I think, of 2012. You said to me, "Hey, Uncle Frank, do you want to go on the Grand Canyon?" And I said, "Oh, there's no way I could do that, Jason." I said, "I just have too many medications and I have no idea how sick I'll be." And then finally, when it came within weeks to go, you talked me into it. And I was very nervous about it because I didn't know what was going to happen out there. It was 16 days out in very deep wilderness.
The roughest of conditions possible.
Yeah, over 110 degrees every day. And doctor's office called me at home to tell me they didn't think I should go on this trip. I had said to you, I said, would you have a problem if I actually did die out there in the canyon and you have to deal with a dead body? And you said, "What? No, we'll just leave you there. We'll just tie you to the front of the boat." And it couldn't have been better. I mean, if I were to imagine what it would be like to die and the sensation that I would want to have, it would be that feeling that we had so often in there, that indescribable sense of being so small, so insignificant, yet completely connected to it.
I think you came back stronger and it gave you a new lease on your abilities, because I don't think you expected to be able to do it. And once you did it, and with the gusto, I mean, this hitting those rapids, those waves that you took on, hooting and hollering. This is what life is about. I think you found it to its core when pushed to your weakest and most scary point in life. You faced it and said, bring it on, I'm going to take you.
My regular doctor, I think she goes, I can't even believe you're on your feet. She goes, anybody else would have like taken to bed years ago. And he goes, and you're like still going. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to go until I can't go anymore, I guess. And that's all. And I love you very much.
I love you too. Thank you for bringing me in on this. Are we going to get to go rafting this weekend now?
Do you want to? We're definitely going to go. We're rafting.
That was Frank Hatch and his nephew Jason Friend, recorded before Frank passed away. The piece was produced by Ryan Miller for KALW's project, The Spiritual Edge, in partnership with StoryCorps Legacy, which collects the stories of those living with serious illness. It was recorded at the Zen Hospice Project in San Francisco. And that's it for Cross Currents today. Our team includes Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Angela Johnston, Lisa Morehouse, Judy Silber, Kaval Roop Singh, Andrew Stelzer, and Bowen Wang. The show was engineered by James Rollins. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Jen Chien is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.